Welcome back to Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Judy Nathans.
And over here in this corner is Robert Winters.
Yeah. Okay. So, wow. So that's a lot to digest there.
Yeah. So we were talking about the fact that there was a 15-person charter review committee appointed.
That's right.
Right. And it was just sort of done in sort of rapid dog ate my homework quick style form, where you had about 3 or 4 days to nominate yourself, and then the council had 2 days to make a decision, 1 day to make a decision.
Oh, I thought they had more than 3 days. It was announced a while ago.
It was pretty short. It was still
in the order of a week
or something like that. So they made the selections, and now I think they're talking about possibly having their first meeting, maybe as early as the end of this month of July. But certainly no later than August. How it actually carries out, there's no rules that I know of how it would work. Will there be a chair? Who will be the chair?
Will city staff
support them, or will they work independently?
Right. And also, I don't know. So are there any counselors that are going to be there?
No, it is not actually permitted. Part of the way the question was is that you could not be an elected official in order to serve on this committee, you know, either in the city or the county. Yeah.
But I'm glad to see Lisa Peterson's name on there, because she's not working for the city anymore, but at least she has been in the city.
I'm not going to go through everybody's one by one. That would be rude.
Well, I only recognize.
Well, I was happy to see Kathy Bourne.
Kathy Bourne's on there too.
And I was very happy to see Lisa Peterson there.
Right, that's true. I forgot about that.
They both have
a long history. Yeah.
They have some knowledge about the system,
as an elected official and one as an employee.
As actually having worked in the city manager's office, having been acting city manager for
a while. That's right.
Too. Yes. Yeah, so I think those are fine. And there are a few other people I looked at, you know, but yeah, there's also some people who are pretty young. There was somebody who's just, I believe, a Harvard Crimson opinion writer up until 2 years ago, who's probably in the early 20s. But I did find a few articles where the person was writing on election methods, specifically the Condorcet method. And I think, okay, so there's a person who has some interest. Well, that's a whole nother topic.
But at least they have some interest in how people. Okay, so there's some knowledge there.
And let's not shirk from the observation that one part of the planning charter, which is now going to be subject to review by these 15 people, it includes Chapter 54A, which is the PR election system that we use in Cambridge.
Okay. Right.
And, you know, ranked choice voting has been sort of on the rise around the country, but whether it's used to elect single members or whether it's used to elect a multi-member body, actually, that's much rarer. I mean, when you talk, people talk about ranked choice voting, even the ballot question was on a statewide referendum a couple of years, initiative petition, I think it was.
Yeah.
That was not to create multi-member bodies, like that would be elected using proportional representation. It had nothing to do with proportional representation.
Right.
It had everything to do with ranked choice voting in elections meant to elect one person.
Right, so like in a primary or something.
Right, so to address the spoiler effect.
Where you can win by getting 33% or something,
Right, so talking about proportional representation elections is another matter. Now, one thing I would say, I would have looked on this as an opportunity because, you know, one of the corrections I would have made and will still propose making here. Because it would have taken a charter change to do it. Well, okay, if you're going to be doing it, then let's talk about it now. Is that we do have this little annoyance in our proportional representation elections where there is a minor but non-negligible dependence on ballot order. So that if you would literally shuffle the ballots, there would be some minor changes in the outcomes.
I see.
Not necessarily of the winners, but that in itself would be a possibility. And there are ways of correcting this. In fact, there's one other Massachusetts town. I think is it Amherst or Northampton maybe.
Yeah.
But anyway, elsewhere recently, the town council vote or city council for that town voted to adopt proportional representation elections. And they, you can't go into, you can't dip into the well and pull out a Plan E charter anymore because it's not in the well anymore. So you basically roll your own. And as long as it meets, constitutional muster and the approval of, attorney general and whatever, you certainly don't want to pass an election system that basically says Robert gets to pick who's the winners are, right?
Right.
So
right.
You need to have a fair system that meets all the rules.
I thought you've done analysis of this and thought it didn't make much difference.
It doesn't make much difference, but one of the things that, and really, I mean, this may sound more of a clerical concern.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
For example, in the 2013 election, Minka Van Beusekom sought a recount in that election.
Oh, right. That's right.
And I'm personally of the belief she did it not because she believed there was any impropriety in the election, but because if you moved even one ballot amongst the surplus of Leland Chung that year, you would have been pulling a different 690 some odd ballots out
to be redistributed,
and the election would be affected by that large surplus.
Right.
So
that's a good point.
I don't think any election system should have a part of it be that you would ask for a recount, not because of a problem in the election, but because you wanted to have another roll of the dice.
Right. And we use it makes sense.
So even though it's a relatively minor potential fluctuation in there, the fact that there's any randomness in there at all is a problem for me. And again, I can explain it as well as anyone, but I would have preferred.
Yeah.
And Dennis Carlon, when he was first elected in, was that 2013? It might have been.
13, I think so.
Yeah. So one of the first things he did, maybe because I was just such a loudmouth about it, is he proposed making some changes to the so-called Cincinnati method of doing a PR count to make it ballot order independent. And I said, well, thank you very much, Dennis. That was good. Yeah. And I got called in to meetings with the city manager and the city solicitor at the time to talk about this. And, and I had a lot of things to say about how it would be done. I also talked to the people who wrote the software for the elections about
what happened.
Actually, bless her heart, the city solicitor actually noticed one minor change that I hadn't even thought about in there that would have to be modified that was actually not part of the existing software. So you'd have to actually change have the software be rewritten. Since then, we've actually come up with, there's actually, arguably a better software alternative that we could use where you could basically just punch the options and just do it all differently now.
All right, even if someone didn't ask for a recount, say, didn't Craig Kelly lose the 10th seat by how many votes was it? Wasn't it close?
Right. So the thing is that even if you
could
lose,
that have been,
you could, if you lose by a relatively small margin, and honestly, it's probably, when you're getting up around 20, you're already, forget it, ain't going to change, right?
Oh, really? So 20 votes, it's already not going to change.
But if you actually look at the history of proportional representation election, I can show you, and actually I started tracking it in each of the more recent elections, how many of the intermediate rounds were decided by fewer than a handful, a small number of votes.
Okay, right? So wouldn't that...
You could argue that if we were to have done a mild change, that in the election when, Sean Tierney was running, that he could have had a shot, but it would have been at the price of kicking Craig Kelly off. But then Kelly was kicked off the following year.
I see.
But the point is that we should never be picking horses here. It's not up to those of us who talk about election systems to ever be designing a system meant designed to elect the people we like. It should be about fairness and neutrality throughout. And I also would say reproducible results. And the fact that our current system might not give reproducible results, especially we also have to go through this horrible multi-week long ballot matching process that will cost over $100,000 to do a recount. Whereas we really should be able to just do it in a couple of days just by basically checking the ballots and then rerunning them through the scanners. It should be, those options should be available and robust.
And you're saying they're not available right now? They're not?
No, because it would require a charter change. So that's what I'm saying.
So okay, that's a good idea.
Right. But, you know, honestly, I don't, you know, if there are partisans embedded within this group of 15 who are really there to carry the water of an elected official who would rather become, you know, the mayor for life, or if they want to basically not have to suffer through the indignity of running for re-election every 2 years, and they would rather run every 4 years only. But, you know, even that, how would you do that? Okay, well, if you kept 9 people elected at large, and you decided, well, okay, we're just going to have elections staggered, so 4 will run and they also talk about doing it during even numbered years rather than odd years. Yeah.
So that more people would come out.
Well, yeah, but you know, there's a reason why in Massachusetts the municipal elections are all held in odd numbered years.
Because the
attention is on the municipal government, the municipal election. You're not sitting there riding the coattails of Biden, you know, when you're running for city council. So to me, it is incredibly misguided to think that because you might have higher voter turnout, that somehow that would be an improvement to the system. I don't see that at all. I see the exact opposite being the case.
If you want higher turnout, then you just do your job. I mean, you just campaign and you just get people to vote for you, you know.
Right, but if you did do a staggered system of 4-year terms where you elect, let's say, 4 1 year and then 5 another, well, if you're doing that, we're using proportional representation. Well, guess what, folks? If you're electing 4, that means the quota is no longer 10%, it's 20%.
Oh.
Right, and if you're electing 5, it's about 16.7%. It's no longer, you know, it's not 10%.
So you have to go by
right. So if you're electing fewer people, either 4 or 5, it's very different than if you're electing 9.
Well, then they'd get rid of the PR system. I don't know.
Well, it's a question they'll have to think about. You know.
Right. Yeah.
But you know, there are other kinds of ranked choice systems that you could use, I suppose. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sure the guy who wrote the article about Condorcet's method, you know, will probably argue for that, in which case it's going to turn into the world's weirdest nerdy conversation.
Yeah.
Right. but you know, these are the kinds of questions they should be asking. Yeah. And I'll tell you another question they should be asking too, which is, it is part of the planning charter that nobody talks about, which is that the school department school committee also a part of this charter and this form of government. Hmm. So if you're going to talk about modifications for the benefit of some counselors who don't want to run as often or who want to be a directly elected mayor, what are you going to do on the school committee? Shouldn't they have a directly elected chair?
So maybe they selected some people based on that part if they knew. I don't think people know about the school committee.
You know, the school committee, I think when you talk about these kinds of charter-based issues, tends to be sort of the forgotten stepchild.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't think it should be. By the way, one other provision that several people, including me, actually thought might be an interesting way to do things. I don't understand why the mayor, who becomes the 7th voting member of the school committee, necessarily should be the chair of the school committee. You know, they do separately elect their own vice chair, who then makes all the committee appointments. Yeah. But the mayor ends up officiating the meeting. You know, why should that be the case? Maybe the mayor should just be an ordinary member of the school committee, which acts as a liaison with the city council, but not necessarily the chair of both bodies. Right. I mean, I think that's at least worthy of consideration, you know. Hmm. But, you know, we'll see, you know, I mean, it's funny, you know, sometimes if you're actually appointed to a committee, you can actually say less because you're just one of 15. Uh-huh. And if you're not on the committee, you can be the loudest voice in the room, but you're just not allowed to speak when the chair doesn't want you to speak, you know, and I'm going to be the loudest voice in the room. There's no question about it. So, you know. Anyway, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out and to see whether it reveals itself to be a political process as opposed to a civic process. A civic process, which would be one that is just for the betterment of the city, independent of anyone's political futures.
So,
or not.
So it'd be interesting to see if these are on Zoom or if the public can attend but not say anything. It just seems to me they have to be able to do some work on their own first.
I will be so severely disappointed.
Really?
If this ends up being something that's conducted through Zoom. I really will.
Well, but what about, okay, what if it's in person, but you can't say any? I mean, the public, I mean, at this point,
well, I mean,
it wouldn't make sense to have public comment at this point.
But this is why it pays to have a good chair. A good chair can basically, you know, if they know that within the audience is a professor of constitutional law or somebody who has great expertise in it, they could actually defer to them, you know? I mean, I was at a round table of the school committee some years ago where then school committee member Patty Nolan, even though it was a round table meeting where it was no public involvement, I got called upon to speak about it because I knew a thing or two about mathematics in it and
okay, you know, but I would think, but maybe that's how they pick this committee, is that they have people representing those different expertise.
You know, honestly, I mean, I did look over the roster and I'm not so convinced of
that. There's somebody that knows constitutional law.
There's at least that, but this is not, but I don't know that that's necessarily something of great value for this particular process.
No, but
process.
They know how to read law. I don't know. But what if they're not going to have like somebody from the Collins Center be a consultant to the group or someone to guide them? I mean, who's going to guide this committee?
I think that they certainly could.
They could.
It has never been identified who would make those decisions or who would serve as staff.
Well, it's all new, so it's probably learn as you go.
Yeah,
see.
Yeah. So a lot of it is completely unknown, and you know, and we'll just have to see. If I was on the committee, what I would ask them to do it would be to actually conduct their meetings more workshop style on a weekend, as opposed to trying to do some sort of evening meeting or either within or without a Zoom. You know, I would make it somewhat more, a little bit more open-ended.
I think they need almost like a retreat kind of style and in the beginning, because they have a lot of stuff to do. That's what you're talking about. Right, and maybe they're going to do that.
But I would say not just at the beginning, but to actually have it done.
All the time?
Have their meetings routinely be done more like a, you know, like a not, you know, so it's not absolutely chopped into exactly 90 minutes or something. It could go longer.
But I'm wondering though, when you're selecting people and interviewing them, what were the requirements? Did they say to them, you're only going to be meeting 90 minutes? You know what I'm saying? Wouldn't people ask, well, what is my obligation?
This takes us back to
what
I raised in the previous half hour.
You could ask.
Is none of these things were settled, and
so that
and it was all it was all done behind it, all of the okay. If there was any discussion of any of these, behind closed doors,
which seems to be
the new norm in our local city council affairs, you know. So we'll see, you know, we'll see. Of course, now this isn't the only thing that's been happening, you know, I think either nationally or even locally, you know, I think maybe the national stuff is a little too overwhelming at this stage here, to be sure. There was actually, I just wanted to put a plug in, for
the jazz festival.
My dear neighbor.
Yeah.
I'm actually going to do a little quick share screen here just to sort of pop over here to talk about this here. So, you know, former city councilor Larry Ward also lives a couple of doors from me. Mm-hmm. And actually one of the persons who's the project manager actually lives in my building. And then there's a couple of the people who are associated with this. It's actually was, you know, like a lot of things, including the July 4th fireworks, it was actually on hiatus for a few years, and it's back again at the end of this month, July 30th and 31st, back up at Danahy Park.
Nice.
And you know, I think it's a great event. The fact it's actually spread over two days this time.
Just one day. Two days.
In the past, it was just a single day.
Just like one day. Yeah,
but now it's a two-day event, and I always think it's a really good time. And they will have a beer garden, and it will be within the park this time too.
Wow!
So that's a great thing. Actually, thank you, Jan Devereaux, for being the kind of the charging force, arguing that they should be allowing that the use of setting up a beer garden within a public park, which was
isn't it mainly during the day though, when it's really hot and sunny, or do they have it?
You know, the one. strategic error. It was done.
Yeah.
Maybe it was at the last Jazz Festival.
I went to one. It was very hot.
Well, they set up on the soccer field. It was like AstroTurf, right. And it was like being on a skittle. Oh. I mean, it was terrible. And people were basically hanging out on the fringe. The music was good, but the thing is, you didn't want to be really there. And the only reason for that was they wanted to have the beer garden, but it was had to be outside the park. So they set up very close to the exit. Oh. So this way you could go in and out of the beer garden. So now they won't have to do
I must have missed that. I've only been there once and it was not that at all. So
this year.
Is it only during the day? I mean, who drinks beer at 2 o'clock in the afternoon?
I do.
Well,
not habitually, but occasionally.
But what were the hours? Did you see what the hours were?
You know, usually it's a daytime event, but it carries over for, you know, 2 days and, you know, and you'll have the beer garden right there within the park and it'll be on the grass, natural grass. So, you know.
I did, because there's so many kids that go, I think it'd be nice if it was like 12 to 8 or something. I don't know.
Yeah, well, you can check it. There's a website. You can do that. The announcement, the press release up on my site and elsewhere as well. You know, so that's sort of pretty cool. There are other, actually, these are sort of small change stuff here, but I was sort of I found it interesting, you know, especially with all the other ballot question thing about the city council having review of appointments by the city manager. So the manager made a whole flurry appointments before that provision went into effect. And then there were some done in January, February that then were held up for weeks and weeks and weeks while they came to a quiet understanding that Mr. Manager, you damn well better not nominate somebody that we don't like. So we'll just privately talk about it outside of public view in advance before you actually appoint anybody, which again is another part of this rather unnerving trend toward lack of openness, lack of transparency. But I was intrigued to see that there were two new appointments to the Cambridge Health Alliance, which are not subject, at least my interpretation is that they are not subject to city council review. But, you know, again, that was always a gray area. But one was former Somerville Mayor Joe Curtatone is now a Somerville representative of the Cambridge Health Alliance Board of Trustees. Mm-hmm. And Danielle Allen, who had been running for governor.
I know, I saw that,
You know, so anyway, I thought, okay, well, we're back to doing that. But by the way, I think it's probably worth noting that unless I've miscalculated, today was officially Louis DePasquale's last day as city
July manager. 5th, I think you're right. Yeah.
And as of tomorrow, we will have acting city manager Owen O'Reardon.
Owen O'Reardon. That's right. They met today to executive session to discuss.
Yeah, just basically set salary scale during the interim. Right. And then I heard somebody say that the Yan Huang, who will be the new city manager, may be arriving to officially. I mean, I'm sure he'll be around. More like late summer, you know, so in time for the fall meetings and all of that, we should be in place.
Nice.
But anyway, that's happening. It is, you know, I can say, and I'm happy to say this, that when it was Bob Healy's last meeting as city manager, I damn well was going to be there to wish him well. Mm. There was one guy who, strangely enough, I'm friendly with, who was brutal on that last day, and I will never forgive him for that, but I'm still friendly with him. Wow. And I was there for Richie Rossi's last
I saw you. Okay, but I did and see you in the audience, I think.
I was absolutely there for Louis DePasquale's last regular meeting of the city council. I mean, you know, you got to give these people their due, you know. They deserve respect for the jobs that they do, and, you know,
especially
so
during
I was
pandemic times, right?
We'll see whether there's many more exits from city government. You know, a lot of people have been speculating that you'd love to see a lot of people heading for the exits now. It's a big change, you know.
True.
I mean, Healy, Rossi, Louis DePasquale.
They all were connected to a certain
there was a continuity to it. And, you know, I seriously doubt whether the new guy is going to sort of immediately upset the apple cart too much.
No, I don't think so.
But, you know, some people might, you know, read, you know, handwriting on the wall and say, I think maybe I don't really want to be anymore. Or if I was thinking of retiring, maybe it's time to retire. That typically happens.
Has the new clerk started yet? I can't tell when I watch the meetings if that's the new clerk.
No. And actually, interestingly enough, the former city clerk, Anthony Wilson, when they were actually doing the city, I think, was it the manager process? It was actually, they brought him back.
you're right.
He was the former city clerk was the one officiating, even though, you know, Paula Crane was the interim. So I thought it was good. You know, maybe he was just good for it. So
who's the other person that was taking notes? Because it was a woman.
Somebody, and I'm forgetting her name right now, but, you know, there are other people working
in the office. Okay.
Yeah, there would be somebody who basically is going to serve as essentially, if not by name, deputy city clerk, who's, you know, in the interim, you know.
Okay.
So anyway, so I thought that was interesting, and it was it was worth noting. It wasn't just Louis's last day. There were the exits of several other, I think, very significant people. Certainly, Jim Monagle, the auditor, was, you know, at least got a goodbye from, from that meeting. Arthur Goldberg, who's working for the law department. I'm mentioning him largely because whenever we had matters having to do with elections over the years, it was always Arthur who was brought in as the person, or Nancy Glowett, you know. And then Jim Maloney, who's used to work in the finance department and has been the sort of the chief operating guy for the school department now for a good long while.
Does the city manager appoint these positions?
No, well, the person, Jimmy Maloney's job would be done by the school superintendent. Jim Monagle was hired by the city council, but Arthur Goldberg would be hired by whoever the city solicitor was at the time. And
the city manager so the department.
Well, ultimately, even though, you know, city department heads hire you, you know, it's subject to the approval of the personnel department and the city manager.
But they take the recommendation.
Yes.
Just like they do with boards and commissions too. What a farce that was, like who picked them themselves.
Yeah, right. But anyway, I was happy to be there for the send-off and it was really worth doing. So there's many other things. So,
yeah, speaking of send-off, I won't be here for the next one, and I'll just say
but we will be back. Okay. Yes. All right, see you later. Okay.